fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today's Monday, March 9th, the year of our Lord, 2026. This is Coffee with J.C. Sherbert. Hope you're having a fantastic Monday so far, adjusting to the time change and all that happiness. Historically, I hate springing forward because I don't like losing an hour of sleep. But this is one where I'm kind of got tired of it getting dark at 5 o'clock every day. I don't know. Different people have different opinions on it, but I was happy to sacrifice the hours worth of sleep. Took a nice nap this weekend to make up for it. And glad to have some daylight when my wife gets off work these days. But anyway, we all adjust, and then, you know, we don't even talk about it until it comes around again, right? So anyway, hope you're having a wonderful Monday so far, even though you may be a little sleepy and had a great weekend. It was a pretty good weekend for the Gamecocks overall on the athletic fields and courts. Gamecock men's basketball got a win at Ole Miss, and that avoids the 20 loss season. So I think that's good. Little victories, right, at this point. With that game, really happy for two people. Number one, my friend Mike Morgan called the game out in Oxford, and you know him. He's on the shows and on the morning show, fills in sometimes. Also was on the show last week with us for a while. We do JC and Morgan. He's part of our network here, calls games for SEC Network, and used to be the voice of Carolina basketball. So he's had an abnormal amount of buzzer beaters during his career with the Gamecocks. I remember Jermaine Cousinard hit a big shot to beat Kentucky at home a few years back when Frank Martin was there. He was at that calling that game, and Michi Johnson launches a 32-footer. Nothing but net in Oxford. Gamecocks win at Ole Miss for the third straight time and beat Chris Beard's team. That Carolina, for some reason, Lamont Paris's teams have played very well against Chris Beard since he's been at Ole Miss. And that avoided a lot. That avoided a 20-loss season. That avoided I don't see any way they could get to the postseason and get two more losses, you know, even if they win the tournament and got in, you know, wishful thinking there. But, so that pretty much avoids a 20-loss season for the Gamecocks, and that would have been another check in the wrong direction for Lamont Paris and the program. It also doubled the win total from last year in an SEC. Like, look, let's be honest, they didn't beat – I think Oklahoma's probably their best win. They play Oklahoma again in Nashville on the nightcap Wednesday. Oklahoma's won, like, I think 6 out of 8, 5 out of 7, something like that down the stretch. They've actually turned it around. But they didn't finish last, finished 14th this year, 4-14 in the SEC. And so happy for Mike Morgan for calling it. Great call there at the end. You can check that out on his X account. And then also for Michi Johnson. You know, Michi's had a really good, consistent year. He's played some of the best basketball he's played in his career this year with the maturity he's brought to the table. It's not been a good year, wins and loss-wise, obviously, for him and the team. But he's kept on going. I think that's all you can do in life and in sports when you're part of a situation like that, is keep going. And so for him to go out a winner like that with a great shot – to win the game on the road at Ole Miss to end the regular season. Great. I'm happy for him. That was awesome. Gamecock women beat LSU for the 19th straight time in Greenville. That's pretty sweet. I think Carolina women's basketball fans, Carolina fans in general, enjoy beating Kim Mulkey and LSU. They can't seem to get over the hump against the Gamecocks, but, you know, the team yesterday can. That's the second time they've beaten the Gamecocks this year. Texas 78, Gamecocks 61. And Carolina's a little shorthanded, but just was not their day, according to Dawn Staley. It's not the end of the world. It probably sends them out west, maybe, in the bracket for the tournament. Disappointing not to get another piece of hardware in the trophy case, but it was just Texas's ball game, man. That happens sometimes. College basketball, it's not the end of the world. But the next loss you take, the season's over, so they'll go refocus, and I'm sure have a nice run everybody can be proud of in the NCAA tournament. That's just kind of how that program goes. Dawn did mention yesterday, the last time they took a loss like that, they won the national championship. And trust me, we've seen it before on the men's and women's side. You stump your toe in the conference tournament, and then boom, here's that team. They're in the Final Four, and many times they win it all. Not going to be easy. A lot of good teams out there this year, but certainly, you know, disappointing result there. Disappointing on the softball field. Got swept by Texas. Some brutally tough games. The theme of this softball season so far, and I'll let Jamie Bradford and all the folks that I actually watched a lot of that series this weekend. I enjoy watching softball. You know, just kind of right there on the cusp many times and just can't seem to get over the hump, but eventually that'll work out. They play Duke this week. It's a good team, and we'll see kind of how all that goes. Last year they started 0-3 in the SEC and ended up with a, you know, almost getting to Oklahoma City. So I still have faith that program that's been challenged quite a bit early on in the season with a very tough schedule. We'll see how they go. And then on the baseball diamond, things kind of got better, folks. Winning is important. Going 5-0 was important. I don't know that that's anything to write home about, but Princeton had gotten some wins over some power conference teams early. You know, they took the Gamecocks to the wire in game two, 4-3. First one was 10-7. It was a little closer, you know. But then last night, the Gamecocks, in a game that was supposed to start early, but didn't start till 7. Gamecocks put it on them 13-1, run ruled Princeton. You know, here's the interesting part about that. And I got to give Jamie Bradford credit, you know, base president, baseball expert. Gamecocks last night walked 6 times, hit by 4 pitches, 10 free bases by the Princeton pitching staff. Carolina was much more patient. Selective at the plate. Amp Phillips with an outstanding start too, by the way. Rebounding from probably a start he wasn't all that fired up about against Clemson. And, you know, 13-1 run rule of team. You've got the Citadel on Tuesday night down at the Joe in Charleston, and then Florida on the road. Hey, look, that's this is where you want to be getting better. And Pulmonary said it, and I thought, you know, unlike some previous games where they're just kind of swinging away, they were more selective. So hats off to Bradford for nailing that. And he also nailed something else. And that's that Logan Sutter should be in the lineup every single day. So this week he was 9-for-16 with 2 doubles, 4 homers, 10 RBIs, 6 runs scored, 611 on base percentage and a 1.438 slugging percentage. That's courtesy of GamecocksOnline.com. He had homers in all of the games against Princeton, including the go-ahead shot in the bottom of the 8th on Saturday, 3-for-3 with 3 RBIs, 2 runs scored Sunday, and 3 RBI games in 3 of the 5 contests. He's hitting now .405 with 5 homers and 14 RBIs this year. Brandon Stone also continues to be great in long relief on the mound. And also KJ Scobie, who Pulmonary said was dealing with an illness like a lot of other people. Patrick Evans had to miss the whole weekend. He's at home sick. 5 doubles in 5 games battling an illness. So, you can see some things coming together. A little bit different approach at the plate. That's kind of what we've all been hoping for. We'll see if it holds as they get into SEC play. I think it's important they beat the Citadel. You don't want to go down and after winning 5 in a row and drop one again. I think you got to keep the momentum going. Now, I'm gonna throw something out that may give everybody a little hope, and I don't know. Hope can be a dangerous thing, right? But I don't know if you caught the scores from around the SEC. If you're listening to Stewart and the broadcast, Derek was in some. He does a great job on the Seawell scoreboard, keeping you updated, right? Well, High Point played the team Carolina's playing this weekend down in Gainesville, and they took 2 of 3 from the Gators, 7-2 on Friday, 6-2 on Saturday, and Florida had to rally to win 12-11 Sunday. So that was interesting. Sacramento State took 2 of 3 from LSU with a 5-4 win in game one and a 6-1 win in game three. And then there was just a slew of disasters on Sunday. Wright State 6, Tennessee nothing. Stetson 4, Arkansas 1. North Dakota State 5, Vandy 2. Vandy's 10-7. And then the Sac State result. So just about everybody has lost games. LSU's lost 5, Tennessee's 4, Arkansas's 4. Some of them played legit, really good competition in some of those not exhibition, tournament style showcase games out in Texas. But it's something else. Kentucky played the Citadel and swept them this past weekend. That's for point of reference. USC Upstate was a common opponent with Texas. Texas had a game. They won 11-9 against the Spartans, but other than that, they handled business. Gosh, Missouri's 14-2, but it doesn't seem like it, right? I tell you, like if you look at like I think Mississippi State's played pretty legit all year this year. And the two Mississippi schools really probably, in my opinion, have just looking at who they play. But you never know. Texas is undefeated, 15-0. They've handled business, but you are not alone, Gamecock fans, as far as dropping some mysterious games when it comes to SEC baseball. And it all gets started really for real this weekend in Florida. And the Gators are sort of scuffling around. I mean, 14-3 is not a shabby record, but they did lose their opener, I think, to UAB and then lost 2 of 3 to High Point. Is that just kind of one of those weird things that happens because it's baseball, or is that a sign that maybe they're slumping and Carolina's doing well at the right time? I don't know. We'll see what happens. Florida's awfully good. And then Arkansas comes in to the Founders right after that. So it doesn't get any easier, right? But certainly you can see some light at the end of the tunnel for baseball. South Carolina spring football practice continues. They're in pads and, defensive tackle. We talk about the defensive line a lot because the defensive line is important when you're in the SEC. Obviously, if you don't have at least a competent defensive line, you're really more than likely going to put yourself at a disadvantage on defense. You got to at least be pretty good by comparison. Which, when you compare that to other leagues, most coaches will tell you that, well, yeah, the defensive lines in the SEC are sick. And that's still the case. I don't care how many national championship trophies the Big Ten wants to, talk about. Defensive line in the SEC is where it's at. So you got to be as good as the other guy, or at least in the ball game. I believe South Carolina was last year overall. I don't know that it was as good. Probably definitely wasn't as good as 2024. But when you got all those NFL players and you have to replace them year over year, it's hard to be as good, right? Which was dominant at times. I mean, you're talking about Kennard, Stewart, TJ Sanders, Tonka, Boogie, DeAndre Jules, when he was healthy, was in there. I mean, it was a deep, good group. Even Rondo Porter got in at the end and got into the rotation. Went to App State this year, started out. He's at Rutgers. So hats off to him for making his way back to the Power Four and probably getting a nice paycheck from that. But and was a walk-on at South Carolina. But they, I thought that this past season, 2025, when the viral video of Randy Clements came up, it triggered something because I remember this time last year, there was mass panic about the D tackle position. Because I think a couple of reports had said, oh, it's not good, and it was first day they weren't even in pads. So 2 years in a row we've had mass overreaction. One was on this end. It was the fan base overreacting a bit. This past time with Randy Clemens, it was more outsiders, which was bizarre. But over the first day in practice without pads, right? There's been some kind of crazy drama about the line of scrimmage at South Carolina. I guess that's how things go. But D tackle ended up being pretty good last year. Not great. And I want to say that because I've been giving them kudos all offseason. And sometimes yours truly gets misinterpreted when I say positive things. It's like, oh, it doesn't mean great. It means good by comparison to expectations most of the time. And I thought the silver lining in the D tackles last year is this. Number one, they didn't have their coach, Travion Robertson. If you look at, like we mentioned, TJ Sanders and Boogie and Tonka. Okay. So Travion comes in. Oh, just a little history lesson here. So Travion comes in. Jimmy Lindsey leaves like in June, right? No spring. So they had already been through spring practice. Travion comes in off season. Jimmy Lindsey goes to LSU. I don't know what it is about defensive line coaches at Carolina going to LSU, but that happened. I see how many. See the third, Ron Cooper, under Spurrier left Carolina to go to LSU. I'm trying to think of anybody else. But anyway, but yeah, Sterling Lucas would probably be the third to go to LSU, if I recall. Don't want to get caught up on that though. So Travion Robertson comes in. 2023, I think those guys were all very inconsistent. They were playing a bunch of snaps. I do think when they went to the three-man front and let Tonka kind of play an edge-ish position toward the end, it helped him free him up a bit to make more plays. Obviously, TJ Sanders at times was dominant. If you remember the Georgia game, I mean, man, that Georgia game in 2023, TJ Sanders on defense and Tree, big Tree on offense. Well, they had tremendous games that game. That one, Juice Wells not gotten hurt. I think Carolina to score more points, and they probably could have pulled a Titanic upset. Georgia was pretty really good that year, too, by the way. They weren't as dominant. They had some closer games, but they didn't lose till they got to Alabama, lost by a field goal in the SEC championship game. The game was in Athens, but TJ was great that game. But up and down, Boogie kind of up and down. And what I was told at the time was there was sort of a feeling out process. Jimmy Lindsey and Travion Robertson, different style coaches completely. I mean, Travion's more like his mentor, Brad Lawing, and a lot of movement, a lot of attention to detail, rep, 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 high pace. Lindsey's more kind of I guess, a guy that, and there's not anything wrong with how anybody does it. Let's be clear about that. Coaches, as we've established, all have different philosophies, and it doesn't mean they can't be effective. But it's an adjustment for any player, especially when you've been through spring with one guy and you got this other guy that's a lot different coming in for another. So 2023 is kind of a feeling out thing. And so then you get to 2024 and something clicked with all those guys, and you start to see the impact Travion had. TJ Sanders consistently played elite football the whole year. Tonka Hemingway, best year. Boogie, best year. I mentioned DeAndre Jules when he came in. Really good year. Monkel Goodwin went from not even playing at Alabama to being a big part of the rotation. Nick Barrett redshirted, but he was still playing. So you saw the development there. And then heading into this next season, they had, they did have a spring with Travion. Barrett and Goodwin were kind of the guys there. Brownlow Dindy. Well, then Travion has the unfortunate tragic accident, which he had to recover from and didn't get to coach. So Jordan Dove, Jamil Walker took the reins, and I thought got the most out of these guys. Jordan Dove's the defensive line coach at Kansas State now, and rightfully so. I mean, that's good. He's a Carolina grad too, so you always want to see people like that do well. But they did a fantastic job. I mean, that's a concern because anytime you have a coach that's a developer and he's getting guys better and all that, then he's not there. You worry about it. But the leadership of Nick Barrett and the quiet leadership of Monkel Goodwin, and then just the guys in the room, most of them, bought in, and they actually had a pretty good year, all things considered. And at times, Alabama game comes to mind. I mentioned that a lot from Goodwine and Barrett. They were really good. It's Alabama, A&M. They made some plays. What was not there last year, maybe, was the depth and ability to rotate as much. Because you really had, with Brownlow, Dindy nagging, having nagging injuries and not being able to go many snaps, some games he was limited. Devontae Miles played like 142 snaps. He's gone now, by the way. Brownlow Dindy ended up with 300 snaps. Troy Pikes, 244. Pikes was more kind of later on in the season guy when he came on. But Barrett and Goodwine both had 507 snaps each, unofficially. That's 1,014 snaps at defensive tackle. The Gamecocks lost. Oh, well, wait a minute. We could boost that up to 1,156 with Devontae Miles being gone. And so, shoot, you can go 1,160 because Xavion Hardy's gone too. He played four. I'm not sure they're going to miss him. But nevertheless, that's a lot of snaps again for the second straight year. That's Audi 5,000 and your two starters and your leader on your defense. So again, there's work to be done. Now, look, we knew this. We knew this going in because South Carolina had some misses on the high school recruiting in class of 22, I think, where they went 0 for 4. Then they lost some guys in recruiting at the high school ranks. And so then you had to go portal. Portal guys are in and out. I think once that 0 for 4 kind of became reality, you sort of looked at them like, well, they're going to have to hit the portal for a while here and make sure that room is good because it, like I said, it's so critical. And they've done that for the most part. There's some potential there. And the high schools picked up. You got Williams and Ingram, and then this next year you got Noah Clark and Aiden Harris. I'm going to mention those guys. So it's picked up. Hopefully it continues. But so you look at it, and here's why I think this group could be better than last year. And you may say, well, gosh, JC, you've been really complimentary of last year. Yeah, but again, last year, I don't want to say it was a get-through year, but in many ways it was. I mean, think about all the adversity. You lost your top three guys. the two guys that started hadn't played a ton. They played enough. They're older. They can handle it, but they became starters. Then the depth gets eroded a bit because you're kind of counting on Xavion Hardy. He doesn't do anything. Caleb Williams is going to play. He gets hurt. Brownlow Dindy's nursing injuries. He still got 300 snaps out of him, which is far more than he's ever played. Troy Pikes kind of came on at the end of the year. So that's why these snap counts for Goodwine and Barrett were high. And that's, not ideal because you want your big guys to be fresh in the fourth quarter. And every coach that's coached here has said that. Brad Lawing said it. Will Muschamp said it. Jimmy Lindsey said it. Shane Beamer said it. That's the thing that you want to achieve at the defensive tackle position, and really edge too, but most defensive tackles, because once the big guys are gassed, it's hard to get them back. Is that rotation to where in the fourth quarter you're fresh and ready to roll? And so they weren't able to do that as much. They primarily just played four, with Miles sneaking in there sometimes, a bit. So Brownlow Dindy, 300 snaps, Pikes 244. So those guys are back. Now, I would anticipate those guys, being penciled in starters, I guess, right away. But, who knows? Because this is another reason why I think this year could be better. And, basing this on some feedback from spring practice so far and just some other common sense kind of things. There's three primary reasons. Number one, Travian's back. So, like I said, Dove and Walker did a great job last year, but you've got the guy, you've got the developer, you've got the guy that can get the absolute most out of players. It's been proven. Now it's up to the players a lot too with him, as we saw with Hardy last year. You got to get with the program, but I think there's a lot of older guys in the room now, through the portal and also just guys coming back. So there's a maturity there, so they should be able to handle it. But that's number one. Travian's back. That gives you a chance. to get there. Because just like everywhere else on the defense, and really maybe offense too, with the offensive line, the key to South Carolina having a rebounding season, if you could just name one thing, one thing, can't name anything else, one thing. Get the most out of your transfer portal players. And the good news is, especially on defense, South Carolina has a track record of doing that. But there's so many guys on this roster with an abundance of potential that for whatever reason at their previous stops, they hadn't quite gotten there. Maybe it's just the normal line of development. Maybe they were behind other players, that were pretty good and they're just wanting enough snaps to go around. Maybe they needed a change of scenery. Maybe they're not all that good to begin with. Yeah, that's possible too. Yeah, you can always look at every side of it. But if you look just at this roster and the players that they're going to be counting on next year, you go down the list and you just look at these guys and you're like, wow, this guy could be pretty good, but he's got to get there. And so that's the overall key to the whole season. But a defensive tackle specifically, you like having Travion Robertson there on your side. Number two, it's an older room with guys that are kind of at the end. They've come full circle. The two full circle guys, Tamia Durojaye, it's kind of like Tomiwa Durojaye from Illinois, was recruited by Carolina as an end. You know the story. Fifth school in 5 years, but from Delaware, but 6'4", 291. I hear a lot more Taka Hemingway comparisons to him. I mean, to me, he looks a little bigger than Taka. I don't know. Without seeing him in person, I'm probably just talking out of my behunkus here, but I don't know. Big, strong guy, second team all Big Ten. I know they're very excited about him and kind of his journey to become the player he's been. Guys develop in different ways. He had his best year last year at Illinois. They didn't want to see him go. So that's a guy you look at. Kelby Collins is playing inside at 6'4", 285. Another athletic guy. Motor's very important to get the most out of him. Just got to go play hard. But boy, athletically, you match him up against a guard. That's good. He's another older player that you can get the most out of. And then you got Jordan Thomas, who's a younger guy from Georgia, who's 6'5", 310. He's how you draw him up. Kind of Gabe Brownlow Dindy size and all that. At Georgia, kind of was behind some other guys. He's another motor guy. You got to get the motor going with him, based on what I was told. But he's got a long runway. I think he's got 3 more years. But if you can get him going and in the rotation, great player from New Jersey that Carolina recruited heavily out of high school and one of many they lost head to head with the Georgia Bulldogs. But they got this one back. And so we'll see about him. So out of the portal, there's those guys. Well, then the other part of this is this. And this is another reason why I think Travion Robertson can get to the depth he needs to have an improved D tackle year. Like I said, last year was good. I've said that, but can it be better? Absolutely. And a lot of key to that's depth. Your starter's got to be good. You got to have good players. I mean, TJ Sanders, really good player. You got to have guys like that. But the more depth you have, that's quality guys that can give you snaps, keep guys fresh, the better. And it's kind of when you look at it on paper. If you can get a high percentage of these guys to really come on, then you're going to be in pretty good shape. So the other part of that's the freshman. Aiden Harris, I think we knew. He's listed 6'2", 285. Looks really good physically. Naturally strong, high floor prospect. Already there, taking reps. I think that, big time recruiting get out of Charlotte, North Carolina, D-line heaven. I think it's quite possible he gets in the mix. To play just based on early feedback, naturally quick and strong. Not the biggest guy right now, but 6'2", 285. I've seen guys with his build and kind of his, what he's all about, do quite well at D tackle. It's about sometimes it's about a quickness game inside, because most of the time you're matched up against a guard that's a little slow of foot, as we could say. But very, very possible that Aiden Harris breaks into that rotation. Maybe it's the fifth or sixth guy. And then, exciting news, Alex mentioned this during Smorgasbord Thursday, did some checking. Noah Clark, he looks good. You know, now Noah Clark, when they got him, 6'5", 340, you think, well, he may have to take a year to reshape. So far, just eyeball testing it out and early returns from spring practice, they, you know, don't count him out. Now, what does a Noah Clark being able to play in year one mean? Well, that they don't have anybody else like Noah Clark. I mean, not many teams do. I'm not saying, well, Carolina's deficient in the 6'5", 335-pound defensive tackle area, but nobody. That's why Noah Clark was a top 120 prospect, according to some 24/7 Sports, because there's a rarity about him. Now, that rarity is based on potential and athletic upside relative to size and God-given strength and all that good stuff. But there's a rarity about him. That's why you want him. And so the sooner he can take that rarity and make it applicable to playing SEC football, the better it is for Carolina. And I would call him ahead of schedule right now. Interesting thing about him, he's wearing number 65. That's an offensive guard, offensive tackle number. Crazy, right? He's not moving to offensive line. Don't please don't think that. But anyway, so that's another exciting thing. The freshmen are a little bit further along than maybe a Caleb Williams or Christian Ingram was last year. Caleb, of course, because of the injuries, he's still out. And then Ingram came in over the summer. So, and Ingram, 6'6", 310. I mean, there's not a lot of guys built like him either. He's kind of in that Jordan Thomas, Brownlow Dindy, Noah Clark area. You kind of got a nice separation of two different types of tackles this year. You know, Collins and Durajaye and Aiden Harris, you know, they're kind of the leaner types of guys. Devontae Miles would have been in this category too, but he's not there. Troy Pikes is also, I haven't mentioned Pikes or Brownlow Dindy yet because they're kind of the projected starters. They're kind of in that smaller athletic, the Tonka type role. And then TJ Sanders wasn't that big, but, you know, the other role. Brownlow Dindy, you know, 6'6", 311. Ingram, Noah Clark, who I mentioned. So, you know, they're kind of got two different types of body types in that room right now. But we'll see how it all shakes out. I mean, I'm not saying you could see Troy Pikes and Kelby Collins starting, you know, and 285, 290, 291 or whatever across the board. But really good looking group. And if they all stay healthy and all keep progressing, that could work. I mentioned Pikes and Brownlow Dindy earlier as the potential starters. You know, Pikes got better as the year went on. We've said it. Deputy Smitty said it. Big recruiting win, all that. You know, I think there's another step for him to take this year. And then if Brownlow Dindy's healthy, there's just still that unlimited, untapped upside. I'm curious to see if he can, you know, I mean, 300 snaps is not a guy that was missed half the season. That's a bunch. But I'm curious to see what level he can get to this year. If healthy, and this is last year, you know, NFL draft will be coming around. You know, he's another motor guy that they got it going last year, the motor, and he's got to keep working on that. There's a lot of guys like that in the room, but I think there's a lot of guys like that play defensive tackle too. So, yeah, I think that's the key. So we got number one was Travian. Number two was a lot of older guys with untapped potential. And then number three, I didn't mention that was number three, but the freshmen are a little bit further along than last year. So a year-over-year improvement is what you're looking for from the D-tackle room. And I think that based on the personnel and some early returns, it's quite possible that happens. There's never any guarantees. We know that. We don't make guarantees around here anymore. But I do think that there's reason for optimism at this position. And I think that as long as they don't strike out with the portal guys. Like if Durajaye and Kelby Collins and Jordan Thomas are all like, eh, which I've heard nothing to indicate that. And you're kind of counting on Clark and Aiden Harris and Christian Ingram, younger guys, because the other portal guys just aren't as good. Yeah, that could be an issue. Now that would have to develop, and there's nothing to indicate that right now, but it's March 9th, and we all ponder the what ifs, right? Like in Pulp Fiction, gotta ponder the what ifs. Carolina did get a commitment for a 2026 from a South Carolinian, Iowa Western Community College tackle, Ashton Mazone. I think that's how you say it. Originally from Graniteville, played at Midland Valley, 6'5", 310 offensive tackle. So I thought he was pretty raw on film. I also thought he was pretty mean and physical and tough. Plays with an edge, as Shane Beamer likes to say. He'll be here this summer. He'll get in the mix. He's an in-state guy. Was committed to Washington State, backed out of that, and I think Middle Tennessee State and some others were in on him. But you know, when you're even when if you wouldn't have had the injury to Peak, because the injury to Thompson was known. So as far as planning goes, you know, they still Adrian Lamb, who was a JUCO kid from South Carolina, who just ended up going to LSU, was a JUCO. They've been wanting a JUCO. If I'm gonna go on a JUCO this late, junior college player, and you know, then I'm more apt to go for one from South Carolina than not. You know, we all remember Dennis Daly. That one worked out pretty well for the Gamecocks. But just watching Ashton on film, you know, I think there's a lot of potential there. But you know, the question will become with a room that has a lot of older, experienced guys, you know, not necessarily at the Power Four level, but guys that have played college football and some at the Power Four level, not junior college football. You gotta, you know, that's a tough hill to climb, but maybe it happens. You know, maybe he's that good. He did a lot of good things on film. I liked it. Kind of plays with an edge, and I like that. I think the offensive line needed that. So they'll move forward too if there's a graduate transfer offensive tackle that pops up that they can get. I mean, not just, hey, this grad transfer is in the portal. Oh, Carolina. Well, he's from Carlsbad Caverns, California, and Southern Cal wants him. So, you know, that doesn't always happen that way. But I think they'd be interested in that too. And because the numbers, you know, you want to carry 18 to 20, and I think they were at 16. So we'll see kind of how it goes. Darius Gray, of course, arrives this summer as well. Gray is just for the record, he is a summer enrollee and not there now. He just finished up his basketball season and gosh, all kinds of accolades on the court for that guy, which is exciting, exciting. So Ashton Mazone is on the roster for this year. Another South Carolina player. So that's good. You know, I'm a big homer for the in-state guys. All right, the morning show coming up. Inside the Gamecocks, the morning show, Whittle on all things, John Whittle. They'll be talking baseball today a pretty good bit, I think. Also, more spring football, the basketball situation. Wednesday night against Oklahoma and Nashville. Survive that one. They could move on. You know, the bracket, winning that game, the bracket doesn't look as daunting, but, you know, we'll see kind of how that shakes out. The women have to wait for the selection show coming up. Softball has Duke later this week, and spring football continues, media availability and all that good stuff. And we'll have you covered right here. Don't forget InsideTheGamecocks.com to sign up for our newsletter, download the Chief Sports app, all that good stuff. I can't wait to get back on the internet here in the coming months. InsideTheGamecocks.com will be launching. Get the newsletter to keep updated with that. Also, follow us on X at Gamecocks Show. Follow me on X at JC Sherbert. It's been Coffee with JC Sherbert. Y'all have a wonderful Monday. Holla.